When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. This is SELFWORK, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At SELFWORK, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. If you're trying to listen to someone who's highly distraught, in incredible emotional pain, and even thinking about taking their own lives, and you haven't been trained on how to do that, to help them ground themselves, for example, then that conversation is not likely to go well or be helpful to anyone. And then the average person will avoid what they don't understand or feel competent to handle. Welcome to this week's edition of SELFWORK. Hello, everyone. We have something different and fun for you this week. Christine Mathias and John Crowley, who make up my incredibly talented and incredibly hardworking team, have commandeered the ship this week and have gathered a few of their favorite self-work clips for you. Basically, sort of the theme of it is acknowledging and talking about depression. I haven't heard what they picked out, so I can't wait to listen as well. But before we get to that, let's hear from AG1. I just had mine this morning. You should try it. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why, for years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment. And at each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of their manufacturing, and sustainable practices. Taking care of your health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing all those multiple health supplements, like your multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for their quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I drink every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try it and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/selfwork. Again, that's drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. And now, here are my very good friends, Christine and John.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm all right. I'm pretty excited about what we got going today. I know Margaret's off. I know she's not off like on vacation or anything, but she's handed it over to us for this week. So what do we got?
So this week, we have a collection of clips from different self-work episodes going back quite a while. We pulled some of our favorite stories and anecdotes and Margaret Pearls of Wisdom with an overarching theme, which is acknowledging and talking about depression.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting gathering these. We found some really, really great stuff. So we have like four, right, Christine?
Yep, we have four.
All right, so what's the first one about?
Well, the first one contains a metaphor that I've always loved. It's about rocks and what they can teach us.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, how about the second one?
It's about allowing yourself to acknowledge and be aware of an issue and how that can be a very important first step.
Awesome. And what's the third?
So the third one is from the perspective of a therapist and how they collaborate with their patients.
Okay, so that brings us to the fourth and final one, right?
That's right. And then the last clip, Margaret discusses talking about depression, not only how it's important to do so, but also about who you talk to about it and how you talk to them about it.
Excellent. This is good. I can't wait to get into it. So without further ado, shall we get this show going?
Let's get it going, John.
All right. Thanks, Christine.
Thanks, John.
How do you take the time to pay attention to what's going on with you underneath the surface? And just how much time does it really take? I'm going to use an example I used many moons ago on self-work. I'd almost forgotten it until just a second ago, in fact. Let's say you have a rock in your shoe. It's been there so long you've gotten used to it. Your foot may have formed a callus around it to protect itself, so you may feel it less than you used to. But sometimes it shifts its position and you feel it all over again, or so it seems. You know you'd feel better if you took the time to take it out, but it's been there a while, so, you know. Until one day someone asks you, why have you never taken the minute it would take to get that rock out of your shoe? And so, you do. Somehow their question gave you permission to admit that you'd like to enjoy walking again, something you haven't felt in a long time. Now, to be clear, I'm certainly not equating having a rock in your shoe with working through abuse or neglect or trauma, but I am saying that often the first move to getting it out is becoming aware of its damage, the damage that abuse or neglect or trauma does, and giving yourself permission to take the time to do something about it. Because in your world now, you can make everything more important than getting that rock out of your shoe. Rather than putting everything else in front of it, rather than working to deny its presence or even pretend it doesn't bother you, you just stop for a minute. You take your shoe off and you find the rock. And when you begin to take the minute to recognize where pain could be coming from, then even that small recognition and beginning effort to change it can begin to build acknowledgement, understanding, and even self-compassion in one moment. Now again, I'm not saying that this is an easy thing to do, but it's really amazing to me when I'm working with people, how just acknowledgement makes such a big difference. And acknowledgement takes 1 minute. Here's my point. It doesn't take much time to acknowledge what was hurt for a long time, or maybe is a fairly new hurt. To connect the dots between your past and your present, it does take willingness to allow yourself to do it, maybe to ask for a therapist's help, but maybe not. I hope that's the way you're using self-work. To help you see the rocks in your own shoes. To help you see what you need to acknowledge about your past, about your present, about what you fear in the future, and how that's tied to what you've experienced in your life and what you need to acknowledge. Take a moment in time to acknowledge that and recognize its impact and its power so that you can then begin to deal with it more openly and more transparently. Haven't you ever had the experience of wondering why you couldn't make something work? You show it to someone else and they say, well, have you tried X? And you feel kind of stupid. Well, no, I hadn't tried X. Therapists can be thought of as consultants, as another perspective, plain and simple. I had someone fairly recently in my office who had had a parent die very suddenly and unexpectedly. Well, what came up with his own child was that he was trying to get him to do something with him over the weekend. The child was complaining. He was a teenager. He didn't really want to do that. Now, they did end up doing it, and they both had a great time. But what happened was the parent got really angry, way, way out of proportion to what was going on. And I looked at him, and I said, well, don't you think that may have had something to do with the recent death of your own parent? And he looked at me, and he said, I hadn't even thought about that. Of course, he was grieving that his father had died and that there were things that they had never gotten to do together. So obviously, when he asked his son, hey, let's go do this, and it was met with, nah, not really, I don't want to, Dad, he blew up because that was more about his grief than his real anger with his son. Okay. So you can see, hopefully, how my perspective on that was helpful to him. And he looked at me and go, I don't know why I didn't think about that. That's what therapists can do, hopefully. Now, here's the second one I found in my survey. What will people think if they know I'm going to therapy? Now, I don't know. I can't say what your friends will think. I'm not sure. But neither are you. Maybe that's your own belief that's getting in your way. Maybe you think someone would be wasting money or time by seeking a therapist's perspective, but this is a surefire way to stay stuck. And I don't know many good decisions that are made from primarily fear, except maybe to run away from a grizzly bear. Maybe you're more afraid of what will come out of you than you're afraid of what others may think. Let me say that again. Maybe you're more afraid of actually what you'll say in therapy or what you might feel than you're afraid of what others might think. I cannot tell you the amount of people that I've said, well, if you just seek out one person that you can trust and say how you're feeling or that you're in therapy. But lo and behold, what they find out is that their friend is on antidepressants or their friend went to therapy or their cousin did the same, whatever. You'll find out that maybe people aren't talking about it, but they're taking care of themselves well, too. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. No more meal planning or shopping. Every Sunbasket meal is designed by dietitians and chefs to be healthy, nourishing, and delicious with none of the hassle. You can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy recipes each week. And you can order things like Mediterranean diet, vegetarian, carb conscious, even gluten free. I love to cook, but some nights having those decisions made for you and so nutritiously with organic fresh produce is fabulous. You can also have pre-made meal options as well that are just as tasty and are ready in 5 minutes or less. Sunbasket takes care of all the hard parts of healthy eating and delivers right to your door. Remember, mental health is directly tied to what you eat or don't eat, and Sunbasket's offer is phenomenal. Go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. One day when I looked on my schedule, I saw something kind of interesting. One of the patients I was going to see that day was the mother of someone I'd actually seen years before. And that patient, the one I'd seen years before, had asked a special favor of me to see her mother. Let's call her Mom Emma. That was not typically my practice to see someone's parents, but her mom had heard about me from her daughter, and she knew I hadn't thrown her under the bus, but had recommended instead that her daughter work through the legitimate feelings she had while also have whatever compassion she could for her mom. Emma had had a really, really rough life and hadn't been all that great of a mom. The daughter told me that she'd apologized 100 times over, but she'd also told her daughter she wanted to share something with me she'd never shared before. So I agreed to see her mom, Emma. Also on my roster that day was a man who was one of the head honchos of the corporation where Emma worked. She worked on the chicken line, cutting up chicken parts. She'd never even finished elementary school. The other man I was about to see was a bigwig in the chicken company. I smiled a little when I saw that and wondered what my day might bring. Emma came in first. Sure enough, she got tears in her eyes when she talked about the damage she'd done to her daughter. Her feelings were very sincere. She thanked me for helping her daughter. But when I asked why she'd wanted to come in for herself, she said, I've never told this to anyone, but I've never forgotten it. and I know that I've been affected by it. And there was a pause. I was sexually abused by my brother for years, and I've never told anyone. And she got tears in her eyes again. Of course, I asked, how does it feel to tell me? And she said, like a weight just dropped off my shoulders. She went on to describe other things in her life. For example, she was taking care of her ex-husband, who now was almost completely unable to care for himself, and he had been horribly abusive to her. She asked for no sympathy. She simply wanted to tell someone about the abuse and felt tremendous relief, as she said. I admired her candor and continued to work with her for a few more sessions because she needed help setting some boundaries. She needed to remember that she had to care for herself. That wasn't through massages, but real self-care, some time to herself, some rest. So that same day, as I said before, I saw the bigwig, as we'll call him. We'll call him Pete. Pete had had all the education and opportunities that life could offer, and those were many. He was smart, but as I like to say, he was his biggest fan, and it wasn't attractive. He came in with his wife and seemed to have the agenda that I tell her there was no reason for her to be depressed, that she had everything a woman might want. His wife looked at me and said, I have everything except Pete's love. Pete scoffed at that and looked at me as if I'd agree with him. Some basic narcissism, of course, but what was so evident to me that Pete didn't have a clue about what real connection was or could be. The differences between Emma and Pete were many. I could have said back then that maybe both of them, in their own very unique way, were experiencing chronic but moderate depression or high-functioning depression, but Emma had found a way to stay connected, to seek forgiveness, to care, to choose to be transparent and allow her pain to lessen, whereas Pete had very little to no empathy for the chaos of his marriage, nor did he understand what true connection was. I knew at the time that underneath what looks like narcissism, what looks like bravado, is sadness, insecurity, and depression. Now, whether we want to call it high-functioning depression or what, I don't know. Pete only came in twice because he also didn't know how to risk true connection with me. I actually worry more about the Pete's of the world than I do the Emma's. Emma has developed coping skills. Pete, not so much, except in the area of achievement. It was Pete's life that was full of sadness. It was Pete that was caught. It was Pete whose life would stay chaotic until he could try to risk understanding what made him him. What had happened to him? People tell us now that it's okay to talk about being significantly depressed. We see commercials all the time about it, but just try it. It still freaks people out or something to that effect. Sadly, I don't disagree. It will still freak out some people, or some may still have a very hurtful, condescending response, something like, how could you be so selfish? So today in this episode of Self Work, I wanted to focus on two aspects of talking about depression, even suicidal thoughts, that would hopefully lead to a safer conversation. First, picking who you choose as a listener, and then how you talk to them. Let me offer an analogy. Imagine two people seated on either side of a long park bench. One is sniffling a little, looking sad, wiping tears away. The other is extremely upset, even sobbing. Which person do you think the average passerby might approach? It's the first one. Why? There are two reasons. Because there's some sense of knowing that the quietly crying person isn't completely falling apart, that they have the ability to calm themselves. And two, because then that passerby feels that their skills are adequate to help. It's a match. Yet many people who already are impulsive or have trouble calming themselves and who even may be struggling with destructive feelings will answer my question by saying, oh, the average person would approach the second person and are shocked when I offer my answer. I'm not saying I'm right, but I've heard a lot from people who are struggling with depression and then try to talk about it that it doesn't go well at all. If you're trying to listen to someone who's highly distraught, in incredible emotional pain, and even thinking about taking their own lives, and you haven't been trained on how to do that, to help them ground to themselves, for example, then that conversation is not likely to go well or be helpful to anyone. And then the average person will avoid what they don't understand or feel competent to handle. But here comes the major point of this episode. This isn't saying that you shouldn't talk about your depression, but choosing who you talk to and how to do it is very important to ensure that you feel understood and accepted rather than judged, ignored, or just told you need to buck up. There are many podcasts where people are sharing about their own struggles with depression and what it feels like to wake up and not know how deep your sadness or despair is going to be that day. People sharing what has actually helped them, like identifying triggers that cause depression to strengthen or to change your mood drastically. So there are those who can listen and help. We can't all go to therapists for various reasons, and yet it's so important to not feel alone. So here are some major points when we talk about who you can talk to. If you're in an emotional space where the best you can manage is to emote strongly, then doing that with a therapist or professional who's going to be able to enter that space with you and help you sort out your thoughts and feelings is important. In fact, that's often the way I talk about being a therapist, that my job is to hold a safe emotional space for the people that see me. And sometimes that emotional space is really distraught and really despairing, but I've been trained to know how to handle that and how to offer that safe space. Your friends and family might want to do that, but they may also not be comfortable themselves with such transparency. In fact, I've written a whole book on people who completely shut down rather than risk being transparent with their feelings and thoughts. It's far too scary. So if the only way you can talk about your pain is in a very, very emotional, dramatic way, then that's okay, of course. But you do need to seek out some professional help. Or, if not a therapist, at least you'd need to choose someone who has handled emotional crises themselves well, or have struggled with their own depression. This group will know about the lies depression tells you. They will know how to normalize the fact that depression is a very real thing, that it's mental, emotional, and physical. And they'll understand how the symptoms can affect so much of your life. Here's another important point. Realize that your family or friends care about you, but they may find it hard to listen empathically. This is especially true with your partner or your spouse. Remember, what you're going through may affect them in so many ways. Your financial partners, parenting partners, domestic partners, sexual partners. So when you become overwhelmed, it may scare them in lots of ways. Now, that's not true of everyone, not at all, but they're not rejecting you. It's simply that they themselves might get emotionally overloaded and become afraid or sad. So again, I'm making my point again. Picking the right who you tell remains very important to getting the understanding you seek. And not personalizing when someone says, "I just get scared when you talk about this." Here's one more point. It's about therapy. Make sure that if you're in therapy, that you feel safe to talk about any and all of your feelings. I almost hate to admit this, but I know there are some therapists who perhaps have never been in therapy themselves and really don't know how to create this safe space I'm talking about. Or I've been told that they're therapists who use your therapy hour to talk about themselves. That's not good therapy. Now, if you can't talk about or find yourself not talking about what's important, what's hard to say or hard to face, then you may not be ready. That's true, of course. But it could also be that your therapist isn't creating that safe space for you. Now, let's focus on the how you talk about it. How you talk about your depression. Start slowly if needed first. If you find it hard to reveal yourself at all emotionally, if not impossible as in perfectly hidden depression, then part of your how is to begin really slowly. For example, you can tell a friend you trust, "I haven't told you through the years about how I really feel, what I really struggle with. It's hard for me to do that." That's all you have to say right there. If they ask you for more, you can say, "You know, that's as much as I can say right now, but that was a start." A second point about the how. You want to collaborate with your therapist if you're struggling. And I stress the word collaboration. Some people seem to believe, and the comments noted this, that any revelation about thoughts about dying or wanting to die, especially if you make those comments to a mental health professional, that means you're going straight to a psychiatric hospital. And that's simply not true. Now, if you have an imminent plan, then yes, your therapist is going to say, I think you need to go into a crisis management unit. And after all, by choosing to be in therapy, you're asking for that kind of help, that kind of guidance, because sometimes you have reached a crisis and you need that kind of help. And outpatient therapy is not crisis management. But usually there are other routes as long as safety is monitored and others in your circle or your family know what's going on so they can support you and help you. That plan can include anything from more frequent therapeutic visits to maybe a change in medication or specialized treatments such as ketamine and what's called transcranial magnetic stimulation or TMS. And then find support from groups that offer healthy guidance and information. National organizations such as NAMI or Bring Change to Mind are available, as well as many other nonprofit organizations, such as the one I mentioned before called Giving Voice to Depression and one called This Is My Brave. So the who and the how you talk about your depression is really, really important. First, you could obviously go to a therapist and make sure that therapist knows how to provide a safe space for you. If you talk to a friend or you join a support group, make sure that there's someone you trust that will hold your information in confidence, and realize you can get support from local groups, online groups, whatever. No matter how despairing you are, there is someone that wants to know. There's someone that wants to listen. There's someone that wants to help. Thank you all for being here. I was reading something about podcasts this morning early. I never ask y'all to subscribe wherever you listen. And I really need to ask you to do that because it makes a big difference in how the Self-Work Podcast is rated. So just take a minute to subscribe. Or, of course, you could leave a rating, a review. That would be fantastic. Don't forget that we have Self-Work merchandise available to you. You can go on my website at drmargaretrutherford.com. We got a little merch, cups and totes, and you can show everybody you're doing your self-work. And of course, share the Self-Work Podcast with your friends. That's the best marketing tool I have. And I cannot appreciate you that come every week to listen in. I'll be back next week. Again, thank you. Take very good care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, along with Christine and John, and this has been Self-Work.